Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Open Observability Talks. I'm Dotan Horvitz, your host, and here at Open Observability Talks, we talk about anything DevOps, observability, and open source. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Logs.io, the cloud-native observability platform. Logs.io takes the best of breed open source projects such as Prometheus, OpenSearch, Jaeger, OpenTelemetry, and others, and offers them as a unified observability platform built for scale. For those joining the live stream on YouTube or Twitch, feel free to share questions and comments on the chat. It always makes things much more interesting for us, the people here on the live stream. And with that, let's move on to today's episode. I decided to dedicate this episode to a topic that's instrumental to observability, namely instrumentation. Many developers don't even know the word, and those who do don't really understand the black magic that takes our application essentially and makes our app emit telemetry, especially when automatic instrumentation is involved. And then each programming language has its own shticks and tricks. So I decided it's time to unwrap this loaded topic. And my guest is one who knows this inside and out, as he wrote the auto instrumentation agent for Go, Golang, maybe one of the most problematic languages that doesn't allow any shticks. And I'd like to invite Eden Federman to join me.
Hey, Dotan, great to be here.
Thank you, great to have you. And you're joining us also from Israel, so this time close by. I'm also based in Israel. So shalom, as they say. And you're the co-founder and the CTO of a young startup called Kival, and also you're a major contributor in the open source realm. Maybe you can give us a brief overview of your background that led you to your passion in instrumentation.
Yeah, sure. So I've been an engineer for more than a decade now. I actually started as a Java developer, doing mainly backend development. And like in the recent years, I really fell in love with everything, observability, performance monitoring, and specifically eBPF and OpenTelemetry. I created multiple open source projects in this realm. I created a Kubernetes profiler called kubectl flame that basically lets you generate flame graphs for any pod running in your Kubernetes cluster, and is being widely used by thousands of developers. And as you said, I also created the automatic instrumentation for Go, which is based on eBPF. And due to the recent donation to OpenTelemetry, I'm also part of the new formed OpenTelemetry Go Auto Instrumentation SIG.
Definitely be talking on that. That's a major, major success, yeah. Having that as part of accepted as part of OpenTelemetry.
I'm currently a CTO at Kival, where we basically one of the main goals and the things that we're trying to do here is to make observability simpler, again, by developing those kinds of automatic instrumentation technologies.
Nice. So let's start with the, I guess, most fundamental question. What is instrumentation? Many developers don't know this word even. So let's just explain in plain words what instrumentation is.
Yeah, sure. So I think instrumentation is the process of making applications a report back to us that traces metrics and logs. Basically, you have an application, you want to enjoy all the good things that observability have to offer. You need to report all those different signals somehow. So instrumentation is the process of changing your application to report all those signals back to us. And there are mainly two kinds of instrumentation. You can do it either manually or automatically. Like every kind have, of course, pros and cons.
I guess the way that I explain to engineers when they encounter that and they think it's an alien thing that they've never encountered, I usually tell them what you used to do or still do in logging, that's without calling it, this is instrumentation. the manual instrumentation when you do, I don't know, even maybe not using logging framework, just do a printf or whatever language you use and outputting a string. This is instrumentation, adding code that makes this report go out. And of course, if you have a logger that you can use to do it more organized with a logging level and things like that, that's, I guess, the basic type of instrumentation that every developer knows. And also maybe the simplest way to that I found to explain what manual instrumentation is, actually needing to manipulate, to change the code itself, add something to the code to make it emit that log or other types of telemetry. But I would say logging is maybe the simple one, but I think the more challenging example is distributed tracing, because distributed tracing has an element of context and context propagation. So the instrumentation not only outputs what is called a span, which is a sort of a structured log, but also the instrumentation needs to take care of propagating the context so that the trace ID passes, the span ID, and all sorts of other metadata flows through the system. Maybe you can share a bit about your insights about instrumentation in these aspects.
Yeah, sure. I think you said it pretty much very right. Like context propagation is like the main reason why creating distributed traces is much harder than creating logs or even metrics, because you have to manually pass the context object to between different libraries that you're instrumenting or the different parts of your code, or even across the network if you want to have distributed traces across multiple applications. And I think in general, the process of manual instrumentation is looking pretty much the same, regardless of the signal of if you want to produce logs, metrics, or traces. You always have to bring some new dependency to your code. You have to integrate those SDKs or APIs in the relevant places. For example, if you want to add a new metrics of how much time some function takes, you would probably, in the naive case, would want to record the start timestamp and the end timestamp at the end of the function. So like the process of manual instrumentation is a little bit different between the signals, but the process look also the same.
Yeah. And then this is the manual instrumentation, but many, I get a bit deterred from manual instrumentation, especially on the distributed tracing side. So for logging, people grow used to what logging is about, but because maybe of this extra complexity, or because maybe not all the engineers are as fluent with distributed tracing, I at least see that there is it's a barrier to entry for many to start when they need manual instrumentation, which is where I think automatic instrumentation can lower the barrier to entry in this case, which essentially is just you don't need to touch your code, or you need to very, very minimally touch in order to make the code, your application emit telemetry, right? How would you explain the auto instrumentation?
Yeah, so I think like the problem is basically that manual instrumentation is really hard to scale. If you have hundreds of microservices, it's going to take you a long time to manually instrument everything. And like there is a lot of repetitive work, especially when you instrument like open source libraries. So if you have like an HTTP server, you would probably want to gather metrics on the HTTP request and start the distributed tracing from the method that handles the request. So there is a lot of repetitive work that can be automated. And like there's a lot of efforts in making instrumentation automatic specifically in open source libraries. And I also think it's something that is a little bit different between programming languages. There's a different case for every programming language.
We definitely touch the programming languages, because that's where things get more complex. but maybe before getting into the specific programming languages, what I would say is that first of all, what you mentioned, I think is very valid, that lots of touch points, lots of microservices and other and pods that you need to instrument. Although we do that with logging, so I don't know if that is a barrier to entry. People are used to do that. But I think more so is because, for example, in some cases, it's not even a choice. It's a must-have. For example, if I use a third party that I can't change the code, but I still want the context to propagate through it, I need to result to auto instrumentation with the legal purpose reasons or just a black box thing. So I think auto instrumentation is not just nice to have; it's a must have in many cases. But then the question is, what kind of, because it's automatic, when we do manual instrumentation, I can choose. I know what kind of data I want to pick from my code. I want the function name or method name. I want this field. I want this parameter. But when it's auto instrumentation, what kind of information, what kind of data is even possible to collect in an automated fashion?
Yeah. So mainly around everything that is located in open source libraries. So libraries that communicates with the database usually collects like the queries and of course and time of the operation and like the different arguments and if you're instrumenting an HTTP library, it will probably record the method and the specific path and maybe some part of the headers. Luckily for us, I think that OpenTelemetry have a very good specification for that. They have like a really good guidelines of how spans should look like, which fields they should contain, which applies both to automatic instrumentation, but also if you're manually instrumenting, you probably want to follow those guidelines also.
Yeah, and I think that this is important, the standardization, because if you're dependent on the specific library or SDK that you use, then and you use the proprietary API and the proprietary data models, then if you want to switch, it's a pain. I think that's one of the success stories that were done with early on with distributed tracing, when it came out with open tracing as a standard API, so that no matter what actual tracer you use to instrument your application, which SDK or client library, the API remained the same. It was a standardized open tracing API. Currently, obviously, it's merged into OpenTelemetry, but I think the standard that from the code perspective, you're not exposed to the tooling that runs behind the scenes is something that is very, very important and a distinct benefit of OpenTelemetry and standards in general. And you mentioned the different languages, and really there's like a huge diversity. So you have the dynamic languages and static languages and interpreted and compiled, and some of them compile directly to an executable. Some of them go through some sort of a bytecode runtime. So thinking about, I don't know, dynamic languages such as JavaScript and Python and Ruby on the one hand of the scale, and then non-dynamic like Java and Go and .NET and C++, and because they're so different, the question is how, or the question for the community, I guess, is how to plug in these magic things, because ultimately you need to hook into function calls, method calls, you need to somehow extract, intervene, interrupt. And each language has its own, as I said at the beginning, tricks and shticks on doing so. Mm-hmm. So how do you see the different diversity of the languages and the complexity it creates?
Yeah, sure. So in general, I think that just as you said, there are mainly three groups of programming languages, like compiled languages like Go and C and Rust, which compiles natively to machine code, to assembly. Just-in-time languages like Java and .NET, where you compile to some bytecode, to some middle language, and then during runtime, it's been compiled to the CPU instructions. And then interpreted languages like JavaScript and Python, where you basically go straight from text to the CPU instructions. And like historically, the latter of the two latter groups were the ones that were easily automatically instrumented, like in languages like Java, which is a just-in-time language, you can, because the way that the language works, like if we think about how the JVM itself work, like you have those Java files, you compile them into jar files, which is bytecode, of course. And once you do like Java minus jar, the name of the jar, the JVM compiles, again, those bytecodes into the CPU instructions. Like, because of this, you actually have a point in time where you can alter and modify the bytecode before it's being executed by the CPU. And in addition, in Java, there is also a mechanism called Java agent, which basically lets you load like an external agent, external Java application, and load it before you even load your application. And like combining these two together, you can actually, and this is in many ways how the OpenTelemetry Java instrumentation works, that you load the Java agents that modify the bytecode, modify all the relevant open source libraries and all the relevant functions that you would like to instrument before they're actually being executed by the CPU.
I think Java is Java, the pure example, right, of OpenTelemetry in terms of the auto instrumentation.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Java is the one that supports the most open source libraries for auto instrumentation. It also support like things they added recently, log support. So they're also far ahead in this adoption curve. And like in Java, it's very nice to do those bytecode manipulations. There is actually an open source library called ByteBuddy, which lets you precisely say, I want to change this method to record these relevant arguments and like add these codes that do context propagation into the bytecode, and you write everything in Java and everything works pretty well. And other languages like Python and JavaScript, you can do it in a method called the monkey patching, which basically in languages without strict types, you can basically do whatever you want. You can override any function, any variable, and this is how you do it for automatic instrumentation in JavaScript or Python.
So you started talking about it, and I think maybe just to break it down, I actually saw earlier this month a very nice post on the CNCF blog by Ron Rosnick from Helios about how OpenTelemetry works under the hood in JavaScript. Highly recommended also for our listeners. And I think one of the interesting parts is really that you need to find for each language. So in JavaScript, there's the require function that loads the module by name, and then this triggers the instrumentation process. And it's really intriguing to see how much detail, even the order of loading. So you don't only need to load it, you need to make sure that it's loaded before other modules, so that it takes effect on other pieces of code that are injected in a similar fashion. So I want, most of our listeners are not implementing this instrumentation, but I want them to understand a bit about the complexity that needs to be taken under advice when you write an instrumentation, right?
Yeah, completely. Like the bottom line is that every programming language is a different method, is a different way to instrument. Like no two languages are doing the same method. Like.
And that leads me to, I guess, the other extreme. So Java lends itself because it has the bytecode level, the just-in-time. So it's a very clear point in the process that from the programmer side, it's done. It's already a jar, a closed jar. The application is shipped, so to speak. But then from the instrumentation side, there's a very clear injection point where you can manipulate before it's actually executed. So that's a classic one end of the scale. The other, I guess, is Golang, which is a language that by definition hates all these hooks and all these interruptions and anything that is not explicit. So first of all, for our audience that is not familiar with Go, can you maybe elaborate a bit about these constraints of the language itself before talking about instrumentation?
Yeah, sure. So let me just start by saying that Go is extremely popular languages. Like if we will look on the CNCF landscape, like most of the projects there are written in Go, Kubernetes is written in Go. If you are writing some sort of Kubernetes operator, you would probably write it in Go. So it's extremely popular, especially in the cloud native ecosystem. And like the reason that Go is so hard to instrument is that Go is compiled language, like the code that you write compiles directly to binary, and even to most of the time by default it's compiled to a statically linked binary, which means this your application, this file, doesn't need any external requirements. It has all the stuff that it needs to run inside the file, so it doesn't, like, you don't have any way to hook into the execution flow, because everything is so tight, close together, and like there is no external dependency, and like you don't have any way to hook into the code. And in addition to like what we said in the beginning regarding to context propagation and the effort of manually instrumenting, I think that Go is also one of the languages that like the manual instrumentation is mostly hard in Go, like because you have to do all those context propagation and move context between different functions.
So this is I guess the tricky part in Go, and I think the interesting part that you took is eBPF. But before talking about eBPF, I want to ask a question about the framework. So because most of us don't just program directly on the or only with the raw language, but lots of, I don't know, we, for example, in our backend use Java with Spring, we use on the frontend side Node.js with Happy, with Express, all sorts of libraries and frameworks. So my question is, how does that map to the instrumentation, how instrumentation works with these sorts of programming frameworks?
Yeah, so I think that automatic instrumentation really shines in when you're working with frameworks. Like if you will take Spring, for example, if you're doing also using the HTTP capabilities of Spring, and also using Spring to do operations to a database, like you can do main context propagation for these two types of libraries. Like the more the framework has more options to offer, the more the automatic instrumentation can do, like save you manual work. And I think that Spring is a great example for that. And yeah, like automatic instrumentation works really, really well in frameworks in general.
But we need, so the framework needs to have support. It's important to emphasize it's not out of the air. Yeah. It means that the developers of that framework or someone external needs to make sure that there is something in place that you can then enable and use, right? That's important.
Yeah, definitely, yes.
So when I program and I use frameworks and I now want instrumentation, it's not enough to check that, for example, OpenTelemetry has an SDK for my language, let's say Java. It's also important that if I know that these are the frameworks that I use, now to go one by one and check that each one of them offers support. Would that be correct?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and by the way, I think I checked it towards our broadcast, and I saw that Spring Cloud Sleuth is now maybe last week or a few days ago released version 1.1.0. So I guess an important milestone for that library that is used in the case of Spring Boot to instrument. And it's actually not, we are talking about OpenTelemetry, which is, but it's not obviously not the only one. In the case of Spring Cloud Sleuth, the native one, I think, is Brave, if I remember correctly. But it only takes replacing the default with OpenTelemetry, and then you get the same mechanism, underlying mechanism, to support, which is, goes back to the standardization. When you have standardization, then you're independent of changing the underlying mechanism under the hood.
Exactly. Yeah, standardization is everything.
Yeah. So let's talk. We started talking about eBPF, and so eBPF, in my view, opens a new option for language independent auto instrumentation. Actually, we actually had in this podcast an episode about zero code instrumentation using eBPF with Natalie, a founding engineer from the Pixie team. And we had another episode with Frederic, the founder of Polar Signals, that makes use of that for continuous profiling. So it's a very exciting technology that allows to go one level down underneath the programming languages. So can you help us understand in a nutshell, again, for those who didn't listen to the previous episode, how it does that and what's the possibility for instrumentation in that aspect?
Yeah, sure. So in a nutshell, eBPF is the ability to load restricted sandboxed programs into the kernel, mostly in Linux. And like those little programs are actually event-driven. They are triggered by some kind of event. An event can be some functions that was called in the kernel. It can be functions that was called in user space. And here, like, well, Go is a perfect language for that. And it can also be an event that is actually using attached to some network device that you can use the eBPF program to process network packets. And like, I think that eBPF and like these two projects, Pixie and Parca, and I'm actually a user of Parca, and I think that it's a great project. I think they both show, and like the one that like also the other instrumentation for Go using eBPF, I think like those three projects proves that eBPF can do great things, not just for extending the kernels or used for like smarter network routing, but also for extending a user space application, and especially like compiled static binaries like Go, like the ones that Go produce. And like this gives us many other possibilities that weren't possible before.
That's actually one heck of a statement. So you say that eBPF can bring the same level of auto instrumentation that exists in Java and Go, although it's in the kernel level?
Yeah, we actually, it's not released, but it's about to be released hopefully today or in the couple of 2 days. Like the next version of the automatic instrumentation of Go, which also does context propagation with eBPF, which is something that's pretty new. Like eBPF was mostly used in order to just observe application and like report back the way that the functions are working. But in order to have truly good distributed tracing, you also have to intervene somehow. You have to inject some kind of headers to basically allow context to propagate across processes. And this is something that we just released or about to be released. And yeah, I think that eBPF is really game changers regarding to automatic instrumentation for compiled languages, starting with Go, but I'm hoping it will be the same case for other compiled languages like C and Rust, for example.
That's interesting. And actually, I think the entire OpenTelemetry community has identified this potential. I remember when I was in May at KubeCon Europe, eBPF was a very hot topic. And the decision on the maintainer discussion was to prioritize and look into that much more extensively. And then on the auto community day, it took shape with workshops dedicated on what we want to do on eBPF. So it's really lots of excitement. And I think one of the outcomes of these decisions back in May and June was the new SIG, the Special Interest Group, in OTL for auto instrumentation in Go, and your team's contribution there is a paramount piece of that. So can you tell us a bit about the new SIG, what the goals and the purposes? I know that you are a prominent figure in the SIG, so as a representative wearing your hat as the SIG guy, what's the mission statement, what are the goals, maybe who else is involved, a bit of a background there.
Yeah, sure. So it's a pretty new SIG. It's founded pretty like I think a month ago. It was created by two separate donations that was made to OpenTelemetry. One of them is the eBPF base that's created by us in Kival, and the other one is one that is trying to basically solve the same problem of manually instrumenting Go application, but they're trying to do it in Kotlin. Yes, automatically instrument Go application, but doing it in compile time by injecting some more code before you actually compile your application. This was donated by a Sumo Logic, I think, and it is also a great project. And like both of these different projects try to solve and make basically bringing OpenTelemetry adoption to go to be to basically make it easier, like this like what happens this like this is what created this this SIG, like regarding who is involved in this thing. So mainly people from the original Go Go SIG that are developing the SDKs and API for Go, but again we just started meeting. It's if anyone that listening is interesting in being involved and affecting like the roadmap and what we're going to do, you're totally welcome. Everything is open source, and you like I think it's really exciting times, and like we I hope that what we do here in the SIG will pioneer the way for other languages, specifically compiled languages like C and Rust and C++ to do the same. And yeah, everything is in the very beginning.
That sounds amazing. And just to understand, I know it's fairly new, but are there any trade-offs between the different approaches? You talked about injection in compile time versus eBPF on the kernel level. Are these two going to converge or just provide two alternatives? How do they tackle? Is that only tracing or also other types of telemetry? Can you expand a bit more about these things?
Yeah, sure. So like those are exactly the talks that we're currently having in the SIGs, like how these two projects collect to one to each other. But basically, like every method have pros and cons, and like the eBPF solution allows you to instrument closed source applications that you don't have the source code at all. You can basically go to any Go project and instrument it immediately and get distributed tracing and hopefully soon also metrics. And the source level instrumentation basically it works on platform where eBPF doesn't work, mainly Windows for example, and you can also use it to instrument for example the part of the code that are more business logic, more custom to your business. And like this is exactly how we think about these two different approaches, and like we'll see.
No, it's really exciting, and you mentioned briefly between the lines. I want to highlight. So it's not even just distributed tracing. You talked about also adding metric support. We're seeing already a broader observability support. So that's really exciting to hear that. I want to. We have a question from the audience that I would like to show. Nevo is asking, how do you manage all the automatic tool? I'm not sure if it means the different types of auto instrumentation or.
So I think there are many different ways to manage automatic instrumentation. There are two, like one of the projects that we are doing here in Kiva called Odigos is doing this. And like there is also the OpenTelemetry equivalent called OpenTelemetry Operator that helps us to do it.
So I think that's actually a good place to maybe mention another very important open source that your team, you and your team at Kival produced. That's the Odigos. So do you want to say a bit more about what it does in this space of?
Sure. So basically what we try to do with Odigos is to have developers go from zero or minimal observability. So maybe you have only logs or you're only having a couple of metrics, to move them to a really high level of observability. So basically having logs, metrics, distributed tracing, and also the ability to correlate one to each other via features like exemplars. And like without even to dive deep into how OpenTelemetry or eBPF or all those technologies are actually working, we want to give you like a quick wins that gives you like the most of the automatic stuff out of the way. And like once you need to enrich your traces or add some more metrics or configure your collectors, then you can dive deep into how OpenTelemetry work. We actually don't like we are not like a vendor of observability. like in Odigos, you basically select which applications you want to instrument. It automatically detect all the different programming languages and apply the different automatic instrumentation. And you also select where you want to send observability data. We support many of the most popular vendors and also open source solutions like Grafana, Loki, and Prometheus. And we actually have like a blog post we recently released about how you can actually do everything end-to-end open source, like keeping your entire observability pipeline open source. So we call this project observability control plane. And again, it automates like the two main challenges in adopting OpenTelemetry. The first one is instrumentation, what we've been talking here for several minutes. Like, it automatically detect the programming languages and apply the automatic instrumentation. And this is like extremely helpful when you have hundreds of microservices or you're using multiple programming languages. Another advantage of using Odigos is that you actually automatically instrument any new deployment, any new applications that you will deploy on this cluster will automatically be instrumented. And the second one is also a challenge when adopting OpenTelemetry. It's mostly related to collectors and how you deploy and configure the different collectors. We try to make it as simple as possible to start working with OpenTelemetry and observability. So we have some sort of auto-scaling of collectors up and down according to the different observability traffic that you have. We also know how to configure the collectors and change the topology again according to the traffic.
And I have to say that we started playing around and using Odigos, at least for the first part that you mentioned about automatically detecting the programming languages and installing the relevant auto instrumentation. That's extremely helpful because, as we mentioned before, even within the OpenTelemetry realm, you have for each programming language its own SDK, and then you have the auto instrumentation agent and then more pieces to the puzzle. So having something automatically detecting the relevant language and then pulling the relevant instrumentation piece agent from the OTel stack, that's a major help. By the way, how does it handle the programming frameworks that are involved? Like if I use, as we talked before, Java with Spring or something else, how is that handled?
Yeah, so it will, it currently will just try to instrument like all the available instrumentations that there is in the OpenTelemetry project and like in the OpenTelemetry Java instrumentation, and those that will not be exist on your class path will simply, will not be instrumented. But we are definitely planning to do something smarter to basically you don't have to download all those instrumentation and even have a big Docker, a big container that contains all this instrumentation if you're not using them. So we're actually planning to not only detect the programming language, but also detect like the relevant instrument frameworks and libraries that are currently in use and apply the, like download and apply only the relevant instrumentations.
Yeah, that makes sense. Going for the max is safe, but then again, could be heavy. So it makes makes perfect sense. And I guess you mentioned the other piece that is the managing the deployment and configuration of the collector. But I'm not sure that all of our listeners are familiar. So there is a project, a working group under the OpenTelemetry project that is focused on a remote agent management configuration, providing a standard for that called OpAmp. And this is a way again to do it as a joint effort between all the vendors and end users. So your effort is somehow related, or is that parallel to this activity?
No, so we are currently not using it. We are simply reconfiguring the Kubernetes object and doing a redeployment and recreation of the config maps. And like, because everything is highly available, that works fine for us. But we are definitely like this working group works on like how do you modify the collectors while keeping the collector up and not having to redeploy it. It's something that we are definitely planning to to integrate soon.
Great. So I guess this is a good point to maybe hear your recommendations, your best practices, because at least it sounds very confusing, and I hear this confusion from many of the users, especially the new ones on the onboarding experience. That's let's say not as smooth as I would like to have for the OpenTelemetry user. So, with all your experience in instrumentation, what would be your recommendations and best practices in approaching instrumentation in general, and obviously with OpenTelemetry in particular?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I think that both manual and automatic instrumentation have their place. Like if I would start to instrument a new system, I would probably start with the automatic instrumentation, apply it to as much as possible, and get all the signals that I can get from the automatic instrumentation. And then probably later I would still need some sort of manual instrumentation to enrich the data with some custom metrics or custom spans from my distributed tracing, or of course logs. I also, like, another thing that I highly think should be mentioned is basically most of the automatic instrumentation have a lot of knobs, a lot of configurations that you can change, and you can basically control sampling and limit on all these different type of limitations that you can put on this automatic instrumentation, which can greatly improve performance and also, like, send less data between your applications and your collectors. So it's also something that I don't know if from the beginning, but once this observability pipeline gets more mature and more traffic, this is something that is definitely worth trying out, like playing with the different knobs of the automatic instrumentation. Yeah, there is also some sort of challenge of how to keep up with the changes of all the different versions of this of the automatic instrumentation libraries or instrumentation libraries in general. So as we said, like if you're working in Kubernetes, there are pretty good solutions for that. You can either use the OpenTelemetry operator or Odigos for this, because Kubernetes exposed such a great APIs, we can actually automate the process of upgrading instrumentation libraries. But if you are working on another platform, you would probably need to do it yourself.
Yeah, no, I think these are great tips. And I think the last point that you said is very important, because OpenTelemetry, after all, is a fairly young project. It's important to remember. And the lots of changes, I remember things that were breaking because of change of ports, even port numbers and things like that. So it's really, sometimes the documentation is even can't keep up. The OpenTelemetry's official documentation can't keep up with the changes. So you get something in the documentation that is not what's implemented. So I think it is a challenge to still to keep up to speed. And that without even talking about people who don't use the vanilla one, but use some sort of a distro that is provided by a vendor. And then you need to check not to read the latest documentation, but rather the documentation of the version that is packaged with your distro. So I think there's lots of confusion, and you gave good tips around that. You also mentioned the topic of data volume. And this is also something that I see very often with our customers as well. So most of them, when they just do the POC, they even put sampling to 100% and they take everything and they see and everything works fine and they get the functionality going. The thing is that when you put it in production, and we talk about lots of high velocity transactions and the services running, then it's very, very important to remember, especially for data, for example, tracing that is used just for performance. Those who just use distributed tracing for the performance side of things, you don't need each and every sample exemplar. You just need to collect and be able to aggregate and see the trend. So I think it's very important because otherwise people get deterred and then they fall back from even experimenting. So being aware of the option to tweak and to adjust and find the right balance between having good observability but then having a manageable level of data is something very important that that you touched upon. That's definitely right. Anything else before we wrap up? Any other best practices or tips or recommendations that you want to share with the audience?
I think that this compatibility issues between different instrumentation and in different programming languages, like there is a gap, like the kind of the automatic instrumentations that you get in Java, for example, which is really mature, for example, to the one you get in the Python or some other languages. And I think that this compatibility gap is shrinking. I think that because we are developing Odigos, we have to keep downloading and staying up to date with all the latest versions of the automatic instrumentation. And the pace at which OpenTelemetry develops is truly amazing. Like every time I, for example, the .NET auto instrumentation, every time I tries the new version, there are a ton of new features, there are a ton of new supported of automatic instrumentation for additional libraries. So yeah, I think this whole the project is going pretty well regarding the speed development.
Yeah, every time that I talk about OpenTelemetry in different forums, I gave a talk at KubeCon and in other places. Last week, yesterday, you joined me also on the meetup local CNCF community here. And the thing is that every time when they ask me the status, I put lists of names of programming languages support and their version. But the thing is that I can't keep this slide up to date. So I usually say, okay, you see that here, but it's probably already up to date from that, because the pace is so amazing. So fast. Yeah. So maybe tell the audience where they can find you for further information, for the questions to follow up.
Yeah, sure. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is EdenF. At the Fed, or on LinkedIn, or on GitHub, of course. You are welcome to check out both of our open source projects. Also, the automatic instrumentation of Go, which is now part of OpenTelemetry, or the Odigos observability control plane, which is under the Kiva organization, GitHub.
And maybe you want to mention the name of the Slack channel for the SIG in that case?
Sure, yeah. So we are on the CNCF Slack. The channel is called Otel-Go-Instrumentation. You're welcome to join and chat and talk about eBPF and everything related to Go and automatic instrumentation.
And like any other working group and SIG at the CNCF, you have the regular calls on, is that a weekly or a bi-weekly?
It's a bi-weekly. I think it's on Thursday. Yeah, I'm not really sure when it is. You can find it on the OpenTelemetry calendar. It's a shared calendar. We can see all the SIG meetings, but yeah, it's a bi-weekly. And
so everyone it's open for everyone. The important thing for those who are not familiar with this format, it's not, you don't need to register, you can join. There's also a live document that escorts it, so you can see summaries from previous meetings, even recordings, and you can chime in with your items for the agenda. And obviously, as mentioned on the CNCF Slack channel, you can join the offline discussion. I guess everyone who has interest is more than welcome. So Eden, thank you very much for joining me. And do stay with me. I'm going to share on this part. Usually what we do on the last part is the breaking news and some industry updates. So first of all, yesterday was OpenSearchCon. That's the first conference for OpenSearch project. We've been escorting this project here at the podcast since its initiation less than two years ago. So it's great seeing how the community is growing there around the OpenSearch. And if you want to learn more about it, you're also welcome to check out the episode we had about 5 months ago, I think, about OpenSearch 2.0 and beyond. An excellent episode about that. Another important event for this forum is KubeCon North America that is approaching us in less than a month away. I'll be there, of course. I think you will be there as well. And hope to see more of our listeners joining us there. I'll also talk about observability into CI/CD pipelines as part of the Continuous Delivery Foundations Summit. So hope to see you there, and also hope to bring some good news and updates from KubeCon the episode following the conference. Going back to OpenTelemetry, there is an interesting proposal that I wanted to share for profiling, for continuous profiling. Again, we've discussed continuous profiling here on the podcast a few times, and it's good to see, again, one of the outcomes that came out of KubeCon Europe a few months ago and from Auto Community Day was to expand beyond the three pillars of observability, logs, metrics, and traces, and venturing into new signals. And the first one is continuous profiling. There's now OTEP 212, now open for feedback on the GitHub. So do check it out on the OpenTelemetry GitHub repo. I'll also post the link to that for our listeners here. And again, if you are interested, do get involved. It's in fairly new stages, and it's open to impact. Another interesting update from OpenTelemetry community is the governance committee election that is coming up, the 2022 GC governance committee. So all of you are passionate and involved. You can also take your involvement up a notch. So check it out. It's there is a blog that I will post here now also on the chat. And again, everything that I share here on the live stream will also be shared on the show notes for the listeners on the podcast. So don't worry if you're not on the live stream. Another thing is that I wanted to share is actually from last week from Open Source Summit by the Linux Foundation. I participated there and I delivered the talk there, but actually what I wanted to talk about is the keynote by Liz Rice, titled "Is eBPF the End of Sidecar Model?" I think a very interesting discussion. I don't necessarily, I personally am not sure that it's going to replace entirely, but that's aside, I think it's a fascinating talk that I would highly recommend checking out. And Liz is an expert in eBPF. Interesting to see. We talked about eBPF a bit in this episode in the context of auto-instrumentation. It's also interesting to look at the power of eBPF in other contexts and maybe replacing, to a certain extent, sidecars and other elements. So another thing interesting, were you able to chime in on this, by the way, Eden?
Yeah, I think that eBPF is something that's definitely going to improve the service mesh technologies, but I'm not sure that the sidecar model is broken or flawed, or like, take for example, like all those sidecars are producing telemetry data. If you're moving to basically one agent per node, all this telemetry data now goes through a single location, and now you have like noisy neighbors problems and stuff like that. So eBPF definitely have a place in the service mesh world, but I'm not sure like it's actually going to kill the sidecar.
So you and I are on the same page on the with all due respect to the ambitious title, but and I even tweeted about that as I heard it on the conference. But it's intriguing, and actually I like the discussion that starts beyond that, because it makes sure that we as a community test the limits and also maybe understand, as you said, what it fits better and what not. Because when you have something that becomes a hype, then suddenly people think that this is the solution for everything. So I think what you said is the realistic approach that I appreciate. An interesting discussion anyway. Another something that I wanted to share, an interesting open source that actually my team at Logs.io shared, very interesting in the observability space for those migrating from InfluxDB to PrometheusDB with Prometheus database. And actually we've seen quite a few amongst our users and customers going down that path with the growing popularity of Prometheus. So what we did is we built a new open source tool to automatically convert Grafana dashboards from InfluxQL to PromQL. That's because Grafana, in essence, knows it's the visualization layer and it knows how to work with both data sources. So people move the backend but want to stay with Grafana, say, okay, so what's the problem? I want to keep my, I don't know, 50, 100, you know, dashboards that I built. People invest a lot of time and effort in building them. They don't want to start from scratch. And it sounds easy because you say, okay, it's the same Grafana, it's the same things that you monitor, but the underlying query language is different. In many cases, also the metric names are different, and we needed to do transformation or find, even using a bit of a AI algorithmics, the equivalent metric name. So we plug into the Prometheus database, take all the metric names and try to find the best match and suggest it. So it's a pretty sophisticated piece of logic. And the nice thing that it's not a library, it's actually a full tool. So you don't need to be a programmer to use it. You can plug in the, you can import the Grafana dashboards as a JSON from your Grafana endpoint via API, or if you have it on the local host, it does the transformation according to your configuration and then exports it to your you know, Grafana source of destination of choice. So it's a pretty cool thing that I really like. I hope that people try out and looking for feedback. If you do have feedback on that, I posted here the blog post about that. Do share your feedback and check out the GitHub repo, and we can we'd be glad to help and improve it even further. Checking if we have a bit more time. We have time, so maybe one last thing that I wanted to mention. A very interesting blog post by Yuri Shkuro, the creator of Jaeger Tracing, and amongst other many things, currently is at Facebook. And he wrote an article titled Temple, Six Pillars of Observability or something like that. So all everyone is talking about three pillars, logs, metrics, and traces. And he's talking about traces, events, metrics, profiles, logs, and exceptions with a cool acronym Temple. So it worked out well also in terms of the acronym. And I'd add, beyond the fact that calling out to people to go beyond just the three pillars and the understanding that there are more signals like profiles that we mentioned earlier today, I'd also mention that we also need to remember that signals are just the raw data. And we need to change our mindset and understand that observability is a data analytics problem, and look at what the insights that we can derive out of the data, not just be obsessed with, okay, I'm collecting logs or profiles and optimizing on these pieces. Have you had the chance to check out this article, by the way?
Yeah, I actually saw it. It's a great article. I think I agree totally with everything that you said. I think that a key thing to get good observability is also the ability to correlate between the different signals, not just produce all those different signals, but also have the ability to jump from one to another. This is the key to have a good research capabilities and really dive deep into your systems whenever you have some production issues.
Yeah. So maybe a last note, Kubernetes 1.25 was out with quite a few interesting releases, ephemeral containers graduate to stable, pod security admission graduates to stable. So do check it out. And specifically in the context of observability, the very popular Kube state metrics also got the version 2.6.0 that brings metrics for RBAC resources and custom resource state metrics enhanced. Supporting the role, the cluster role resource metrics, supporting service account resource metrics, role binding, state set and info metrics, so pod tolerations metrics. So really good stuff that came out with Kube state metrics recent version. I will paste it also here and in the show notes. I don't know if you go to play around with that and you have some more goodies that I missed out of the recent release. With that, go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Great. So with that, I would like to thank you again, Aidan, for joining me here on the show. And
thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. And I would like to thank all our listeners for joining us on the live stream or on the podcast. As always, all the episodes are available on the favorite podcast apps or on YouTube. We release to the episode apps at the last Thursday of the month. So by the end of the month, you'll have this month's September episode up and running. You can find all the details at openobservability.io website, or just follow us on Twitter at OpenObserve for updates and to share your comments, suggestions, and news bits that I can use. You can also follow me, Dotan, at Horovitz, Horovitz, to get more about this. And of course, if you want to be on the show and if you have something meaningful to contribute in these topics, do submit a talk proposal. We have an open CFP on the website, openobservability.io. So do reach out. And thank you very much for listening. I'm Dotan Horovitz, and see you next month on the next episode.